This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We spend the next hour talking about the visual arts community in Cincinnati and what we can expect from that in 2020. Here in the studio to start things off are Ina Nieren-Minifield. She's the manager and curator of the YWCA Gallery. Ina, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much, Michael.
And we're also joined today by local artist Kimberly Walker, who turned to art after a long career in the military was ended by injury. Kimberly, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And if you want to join our conversation to talk about visual arts or these two ladies in particular, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter as well, or email us at talk@wvxu.org. Ina, the YWCA Gallery has an exhibit coming up later this month. It opens Friday, January 24th, and it's called Figurative Feminine Up Front, and it's described as celebrating the soft and strong side of women in this political year. Tell us a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, we wanted to approach the feelings and experiences of women as it relates to and the influence that they're going to have in their community and their family in this political year. And we were able to pull together several major Cincinnati artists, very strong artists, who are going to be able to exhibit that in and express that in their artwork. It's going to be a very, very nice show. It's their interpretation of themselves as women, and it deals with themes of gender, sexuality, and community. And I don't know if I should mention the artists, but I'd like to say Karen Hebenstreet, Trinidad McAuliffe, Marlena Hebenstreet Kottmeyer, Susanna Terrell, Donna Tellerico, And we just picked up Allison Shepherd. I don't have her name written down.
Well, how are these artists able to express these complex political issues related to sexual identity, gender identity, through the works that will be presented at the YWCA Gallery?
They're going to be expressing the various roles and aspects of who women are as women, softer aspects of them that are seen as women, but at the same time, how they interact with their community and with their family. For example, mother and child, women who are very sexual, women who are educators, who are professionals, women who are active. All of those pieces are caught up in the description, and it's shown in fine art, portraiture, as well as abstract art. Trinidad McAuliffe does a beautiful job of abstract pieces. We have some boots, red boots by Susanna Terrell. These boots are made for walking. I mean, that's an attitude. That's marching. So that's how it's expressed.
And why this year? Because you do note in some of the graphics, to the promotional graphics that were distributed on behalf of the upcoming exhibit, which opens January 24th, that it's to celebrate this particular issue in, quote, this political year. What's the significance?
Because this is the year of celebrating the 100th year of women as being able to vote, and I think you're going to see that all around the city now. You're going to see a lot of venues that are going to be promoting and sharing aspects of women's freedom, women's femininity, women's involvement. You're going to see all of that. And we wanted to kick the year off at the YWCA.
Okay, again, it opens on January 24th and runs through February 28th. We'll have more to talk about that coming up. We are also joined by local artist Kimberly Walker, who like Ina, has a very fascinating backstory as well. We want both of you to share those very interesting stories as well. Kimberly, you spent nearly two decades, 17 years in the Army.
I did.
And you suffered an injury.
I did.
And it was only after your military career that you found this side of yourself, this artist side?
Right. I retired, medically retired to New Mexico, where I was taking community college classes, and I just took an art therapy class because I went down there to heal, you know, physically and mentally. And I just took to it. So I haven't really been doing it that long. And then my mentor, after 2 years, pushed me to come to the Art Academy of Cincinnati.
And so your military background and your relationship to the military, and particularly females in the military, it plays a role in the art that you're putting out. But take us to your military career and what happened?
Well, I was, you know, serving pretty strong. I came in at 28, so I was already older, like a decade older than my peers. And I had a few deployments under my belt, and my last deployment to Afghanistan in 2012. Just trying to keep up with the younger guys in the group, I injured my spinal cord. And 2 years later, I was medically retired. And I felt like, okay, this is a great new beginning for me. What am I going to do? I went down to New Mexico to kind of heal. And it's a great place, Taos, New Mexico, in the northern mountains of New Mexico. And then I just started painting. And by the time I got here to the Art Academy, I'm like, oh, my God, this is serious. I've got to figure out what do I want to make art about. And so I said, what do I know? I know what it's like to be a woman in the military. So I started doing research on women who have died in combat. And then I came upon a large group of women that all died under a non-combat incident is what the military will label it. And I was curious to what all these incidents were. And a lot, you know, maybe accidents during training or something like that. But I came across 43 women that they were labeled suicides. And so I just started reading into stories that have been published on the internet and families, you know, saying, hey, my child did not commit suicide. And there's even cases that are obviously not suicide, but once the CID, Central Investigation Division in the military, says it's a suicide, case is closed. And a lot of families went to Congress, and the Congress went to, you know, Defense Secretary, and that's where I lose my paper trail. But
and we don't want to get too specific in, like, who the people are, just because we don't have anybody from that branch here to offer any type of counter to that. But we can talk generally about these cases that have caused concern for you, because it did specifically inspire a significant piece of art that you created that was featured prominently in New York.
Stories of, you know, like the military do, they come to your doorstep and inform you that your child, you know, has deceased, and
it's
the families.
It's hard to tell that story.
It is. Okay. And a lot of families, you know, struggled with what really happened. And the military will take a really long time trying to give that information to the families. And they've got different stories. And there was one story about a young girl, age 19, just enlisted, so she can pay for her education. Pretty much after training and reporting to her first duty station, she was deployed to Iraq. And within 90 days, she was dead. And she was found in a burning tent with a gun wound to her left side of her temple, and she's right-handed. And her face was just beaten up. Her eyes were like sockets were punched in, broken nose, teeth. And she had corrosive material liquid in her vagina and on the palms of her hands.
So a lot of evidence there that would suggest that perhaps foul play had taken place.
Right. And this was in 2005, and the family has been fighting ever since. Her father is still fighting to this day, and their family can't get justice. So I'm just trying to... I was shocked. I'm like, oh my God, some of this stuff could have been happening under my nose, and I didn't know. So I was really shocked and angry. And so I wanted to tell everybody what I had just found out, because I felt like now it's my mission. Now that I know these stories, I have to tell these stories.
And you work in multimedia, mixed media type.
Right. I started as a painter and then slowly changed into sculpture, but I still use painting, sculpture, video, audio, lights and shadows, everything to kind of bring in it's an installation. So to bring the viewer into this world and seeing and maybe touching and hearing what these stories are all about.
So tell us about the piece that you put together that I understand was displayed near the Statue of Liberty.
Right. It was on Governor's Island during the annual Governor's Art Fair. And it's called Locked and Loaded, which I also displayed at Art Prize last year, or 2018, at Grand Rapids, Michigan. And it's 43 duffel bags, all stacked up, to kind of portray like a wall, like a tomb. And each duffel bag is labeled with the military member's name and rank. But each bag is locked with a padlock, and behind the wall there is a cement, like almost like a pedestal with 43 keys cemented into the cement to kind of tell the story that these stories, they're locked. We're never going to know what happened to these women.
These represent the women who died under what you would consider to be mysterious circumstances rather than the officially designated suicide.
Right. Just like with stories changing from the military and just not really giving the families a clear idea of what happened.
We're talking with local artist Kimberly Walker about her experience after 17 years in the military before turning to art, coming to the Art Academy of Cincinnati. We also have with us Ina Nieren-Minifield. She's the manager and curator of the YWCA Gallery. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. Let's go to the phones now. We have April on the line. Hi, April. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have seen the promotional information for the show that will be at the gallery, and I come from a healing community in psychology and working with people from a social skills structure. And so I was wondering what role the art pieces in the show might be intended to have in helping people confront traumas in their past and damage. And to, you know, through seeing the expressions of others, you know, be able to maybe identify with that in themselves and then move forward. So I just wondered if that was one of the goals of the gallery show.
All right, April, thanks for the call. Or did you want to ask a question?
Yeah, I do. I want to speak to that. April, thank you so much for calling in. I'm speaking now as a gallery curator, and I have to say that in choosing pieces of work that go up on the walls, it's a personal thing. It's all about trying to find pieces that you think are going to connect with the viewers, people who are not only going to purchase art, but also who are going to have an experience of some sort that the artist is trying to communicate. And there are artists who are very well capable of doing that. But in answer specifically to your question, I have to say that as an artist, and I'm sure Kimberly would agree with me, when you are totally focused in, there's a piece of yourself where it comes from within, and you have to focus in on what you're doing. It's not about doing something all the time that's just commercially acceptable. It's about not seeing, feeling anything else outside of what you're doing. And when an artist is able to do that, it comes through with the work, and the work then becomes alive. And that's what I look for when I put those pieces on the wall.
There you go. April, thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for the phone call. We're going to continue our discussion with Kimberly and Ina in just a moment. And a little bit later on, we'll have a visit from the curator of a gallery in Camp Washington, one that operates with a social justice component as well, and another local artist whose work is reaching kids across the region. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our preview of the 2020 visual arts community in Cincinnati and what to expect this year. And here in the studio with me are Ina Nieren-Minifield. She's the manager and curator of the YWCA Gallery. Ina, thank you for staying with us. And we also have with us local artist Kimberly Walker. Kimberly, thanks to you as well. Join our conversation at 513-419-7100. The two of you have worked together in the past. I want to hear about how that worked. But first, I want to get into a little bit of your story, Ina, because we found it fascinating about what it was that led you out of New York to south of the Mason-Dixon line. And I'm hoping that you take a moment to share a little bit of that story with our listeners.
You know, that was the catalyst for my life's work, actually. I I was blessed to be able to work with a during a time when ethnic cosmetics were just being introduced, and I was a makeup artist, and then I became a team leader. But
let me just make sure that I understand. When you say ethnic cosmetics, you're talking about makeup that
is perfect for the various shades of women, as opposed to just a single color of
what
women.
Had existed
for black
before?
Women, for Asian women.
Was that a problem before?
There was nothing. There was nothing out there. This was during the 70s, and there was an introduction. That was when everybody was beginning to explore new avenues for business, particularly in the cosmetic field. And I was brought on board by a company out of Mount Vernon, New York, and my role was to actually travel through the South and represent their cosmetic line by being a connector between the purchase, you know, the customers and the retail clerks. You have to understand that in the South at that point in time, many, particularly African-American women, had never even gone in some of these retail department stores, much less in the cosmetic department, because they knew there was nothing there for them. But the opportunity now presented itself. However, there was a need to create a comfort level that would establish some conversation, because now you have a retail person who's never even talked to a black person who has to reach out and touch their skin and work with their face. And so you're talking about self-identity and all of that. And my role was to create that safe space, to create those conversations. And I was able to do that effectively throughout the South. And then I went on to do other things, which pretty much did the same thing. It allowed opportunities, and that's what I do at the YWCA. I create a safe space with art for people to have conversations.
And one of those safe spaces creations included the work of our other guest today, Kimberly
yes.
Walker. Talk about your connection and how you work together.
Well, one of Cincinnati's greatest supporters of the arts, as particularly arts for women, is a woman by the name of Sarah Vance Waddell. And Sarah was a very strong supporter of Kimberly's work. And I was looking for artists to put into the military show. And she suggested that I get in touch with Kimberly. And we got together, and I went to her house, and I looked at her work, and I was blown away because of the intensity and the strength and the commitment and passion that she had, not only in her work, but in herself. And so we went ahead on, and we decided that she would be a great person to put in the show. I have a partner over at the YWCA. Her name is Ricky Michaels. Ricky is a veteran of the Navy and experienced MST, which is multiple military sexual trauma. And Ricky, you know, I brought Ricky over to the studio, and she felt the same thing. And so Kimberly's work ended up on the walls, and it totally fulfilled every desire that I had for that show. In fact, Sarah Vance Waddell did come to the show. She did end up purchasing a piece by a woman by the name of Mildred Cooper because of the intensity of it, because it spoke
to
her.
That's a great piece.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that people don't always talk about their experiences that way. So this was an opportunity for the veterans to also come to the show and talk about what had happened for them, and it allowed them to open up as well. So it was a good show.
Yeah.
And we'll remind our listeners that artist Kimberly Walker is relatively new to art, though she's seeing a lot of success. She spent 17 years in the military before suffering a military career-ending injury, went off to New Mexico, took an art class, found that she liked it, and now she's at the Art Academy of Cincinnati. And not only are you seeing success having one of your pieces displayed near the Statue of Liberty, you were selected for the Yale Norfolk School of Art, which selects 26 undergraduate art students from across the world.
Yes.
For its 6-week intensive summer residency. That happened last summer. We've just got a couple of minutes left, but we do want to hear a little bit about that experience and what you must have felt like when you were selected for that.
Oh, my God. Well, the Art Academy will choose two nominees to apply. You have to be nominated to apply. So I'm like, okay, I'll apply. I probably won't get in, you know. And then, you know, a few weeks later, I got the acceptance letter, and I was, like, blown away. And I was a little intimidated to go. But when I showed up, it was, I thought it was just going to be really like strict and disciplined, and it was just so open and really easygoing. There was no like stress on us to make work, make work, make work. There was a lot of conversation, and I was about 30 years older than everybody else, all the other students. So that was a little bit of an obstacle.
Well, that's been a theme for you, right? Because you said you joined the military at 28, you
right.
were with people who were much younger right. at that time, and now at now the, you're in school,
right?
And then you're at this program.
Right.
So does that impact your work at all, or does it give you a perspective?
Not really, but to what's happening in the world with this generation, I'm like, you know, very aware of what's happening. And I think that keeps me, you know, current and almost like I still have that youth with me because I'm always around younger people.
That can be helpful, too.
Yes, definitely.
OK, so the name of the next exhibit that opens at the YWCA is Figurative Feminine Upfront. It celebrates the soft and strong side of women in this political year. It runs January 24 through February 28. And Kimberly, what do you have coming up next?
On January 23rd at the Carnegie in Covington, the senior class is having a show. It's called the Senior Expo, which we usually do at the Art Academy, but we've graciously been invited to the Carnegie. So we'll have a show on January 23rd, and then in March, the senior shows start popping up at the Art Academy of Cincinnati, and my show will be on a final Friday, March 27th. So please come out and see my installations. I'm really excited about them.
Awesome. Well, we'll look forward to that, and we'll look forward to your shows coming up as well. Lena, my thanks to Ina Niren-Minifield from the YWCA Gallery and local artist Kimberly Walker for being with us today and sharing your stories. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our preview of the year 2020 in Cincinnati's visual art scene continues now with a discussion about a local art gallery that operates with a social justice mission and a local artist whose work is impacting youth. If you follow the Cincinnati art scene, you've probably seen the work of Cedric Michael Cox. He's a well-known painter and muralist who's exhibited at the Cincinnati Art Museum, the Contemporary Art Center, and the Weston Art Gallery. Cedric is with us in the studio to talk about his very busy 2020 schedule. Cedric, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
But you're not alone, because also with us is the director of a gallery that maybe you should think about checking out, Wave Pool. It's in Camp Washington, and it has one of the more innovative approaches to the neighborhood gallery space in the region. It's more than an exhibition space. It's a place for community gathering and a platform for discussion surrounding social justice. The co-founder and executive director is Calcagno Colon. She's here to talk about WavePool's 2020 exhibition season. Cal, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And let's start with you and WavePool. What is the mission of this place? It sounds very interesting and unique. And talk about what its purpose is.
Yeah, so our mission is pairing communities' knowledge of their needs with artists' sense of possibility. So we do have a more traditional white box gallery space, but we also have a community space, studios, a wood shop, a refugee and immigrant social enterprise called the Welcome Project, and we just keep growing kind of based on what our community tells us that they want. But we always find ways to do these things through an art-centered approach, hiring artists and kind of finding innovative ways to employ visual techniques.
It sounds like a lot going on. How do you compartmentalize all that?
I have lots of checklists, and I do have a few amazingly dedicated staff members that help.
Where is it in Camp Washington?
We are in an old firehouse at the corner of Rachel and Coleraine, about a block south of Camp Washington, Chile.
Okay. Are you? Well, that's a good identifying landmark, certainly. Yeah. Are you using the whole building?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the whole building plus the building next door, which is where the Welcome Project is, and now the studios.
So then what is the visitor experience like? Is it, you know, you're coming in to see whatever exhibition is on display? Are there standing exhibitions that are usually available?
Yeah, so typically we have a rotating exhibition schedule. Our exhibits are usually up for about 7 weeks, and you come in the front door, and that's our main exhibition space. On the second floor, we have a community room where we have all sorts of events, yoga, lectures, movies, and sometimes people come for that, or sometimes they come for a show or a woodshop class or a ceramics class. All kinds of things.
Okay. We're going to pick up on some of those things that you've mentioned coming up as we continue our conversation with you. But let's move over to Cedric Michael Cox. He's a well-known painter and muralist here in town, and you've been a fixture in the Cincinnati art scene for about two decades now. Cedric, you're a visual artist, and this is an audio medium, so yes. It doesn't always make for the most easily digestible conversation when we're discussing an artist's work, and I was hoping that maybe we'd go a little further in having you describe your work. You've been described as cubist in style, surrealist in style. Mm-hmm. How do you describe it?
Well, I use a lot of vivid colors. I like a lot of contrast between my lights and darks. But I would reference my paintings to artists like Juan Gris, who's also a cubist painter, one of my top influences. Franz Marx, another artist from Germany. But I would describe my work in the realm of cubism, a lot of vivid patterns layering on top of each other. You're going to have recognizable imagery. It's not completely abstract. And a lot of the stuff that might kind of lend itself towards abstraction has a surrealist kind of feel. So you might see something that's very atmospheric that will reference something like a George Ennis painting, which is a landscape painter. But then again, there'll be a curvilinear kind of thing happening where the trees morph into this kind of abstract combustion or whatever of different forms moving in and out of the picture plane. A lot of the forms themselves look like architectural notations or music notes, and they just wrap around in a very organic kind of way. But if I were to describe every single painting, even if it bounces from cubism to this landscape, to the cityscape, or to this atmospheric thing, I would say there's rhythm in every single piece. There's a vivid sense of rhythm, and it keeps your eye moving, and it brings you joy. It's very vivid colors, nothing moody. I don't think I could paint anything that is about anything horrific or bad. If anything, painting is trying to uplift myself and the audience from that.
Have you maintained the same style or approach to painting over these past couple of decades?
No, I started off with these large-scale abstract drawings that were based upon human anatomy and kind of this inner combustion of the inner spirit, like a portraiture from the inside out rather than the outside in. And then it evolved to me, of course, moving into color. These are large graphites. And when I started moving into color, I wanted my forms to actually relate to the things that were happening around me. So the work itself was responding to my environment over the Rhine, Cincinnati, where I've had most of my studio spaces. So, yeah, I mean, the street corners, the imperfections in the gravel, the concrete, the rhythm of the buildings, the city, the juxtaposition of forms, the graffiti, all those elements, along with that anatomical inner combustion of visual imagery, kind of forged this world of architectonic imagery, which was exhibited at the Contemporary Arts Center and the Western Art Gallery. And then it started forging into this more biomorphic imagery, things referencing towards nature, which my interest in landscape. So the kind of the cityscape to the landscape. And then now it's just anything I want it to be, I just do. I'm real comfortable with my style.
How is it possible to make a life in this type of creative art here in Cincinnati? Is it more challenging than if you were to go off to one of the more typical places that artists like you might go? Or is it a little bit easier to have your talent and to stay here at home?
You know, since I've only been here, though I've exhibited my work outside the city in New York and Sacramento, and I'm about to have an exhibition in Arizona, there's a nice foundation here in Cincinnati, a real camaraderie between myself and the artists in this city. And I feel like this has been such a big hub for me. And there's a lot of opportunities as a visual artist to, if they're open to it. You know, I am open to not only exhibiting as a gallery artist, but also as an art educator. In addition to being a visual artist, I've done numerous workshops and numerous events in museums, in my own work as far as being a private contractor doing murals. So I think if you stay somewhere long enough and you have passion, desire to want to be seen and give your best and give your all, you can make it anywhere. They say, you know, I've had a lot of artists tell me, well, if you make it in Cincinnati, you can make it anywhere. And I do believe that. I was in New York for 2 weeks and I booked myself 3 shows just by hustling, you know. But I think, yeah, the city has a lot of lot to do with that. You know, there was some doors that have been closed, but I forced them open.
Okay. And so what do you have coming up in terms of forcing open doors in 2020?
Let's see. I have an exhibition in, well, let's start from right here in 2020. I have a show at the Dana L. Wiley Gallery, which is in Dayton, Ohio. And this is her one-year anniversary of her exhibition. And we had a really successful exhibition over the summer of last year. And it was great working with her. So that's going to be a retrospective of all the artists who have shown with her for the past year. And then simultaneously with that, I'll be at St. Clair University in an exhibition that's based around cultural awareness. And that's going to be a part of the REACH conference at St. Clair University. So there's going to be a visual art exhibition that coincides with that conference. Then after that, I have a solo exhibition in Sedona, Arizona. And that's going to be at the James Ratliff Gallery. And I don't think I'll have anything yet booked, but I'm sure something's going to happen. But in the fall, September, I'm going to have a show, a retrospective of the first 20 years of my career at Kazza Sykes Gallery. And I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be, I'm aiming towards 30 new paintings. And also, I'm doing something with Children's Hospital right now. I'm doing 64 paintings for them through the Kolar Corporation. And we're going actually into neighborhood schools like Avondale, South Avondale, and North Avondale, and producing these works of art that I've, you know, designed or whatever for the new critical care building. So,
are these 64 paintings that you're commissioned to do from scratch?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
The kids in the neighborhood schools are going to help me.
I gotcha.
You know, like this weekend, I was mixing all the colors so they don't have to go through the turmoil I go through in the studio. You know, it's really right there for them. But yeah, that's what's going on.
Okay. And you also work as an educator outside of that capacity. And I do want to talk about that a little bit more coming up. Let's get back over to Cal Cullen, the executive director of Wave Pool Gallery in Camp Washington. And you have some things lined up for 2020, including a new exhibition that opens on Saturday, January 11th. It's called Sentiments of Here. And according to the description in the PR stuff that was sent out, it says it explores the effective potential of the Midwestern landscape.
That's right.
Tell me about that.
So it's a three-person show. Snow U, Mark Albane, and Intermedio, which Intermedio is actually an artist group local here in Cincinnati. And they all are taking different approaches to investigating what it is to be a Midwestern landscape. So you'll have to come and check it out. But there's photography installation, there's video works, and there's a sound piece. This show is curated by a curatorial residency program that we host at Wavepool. So Sora Kang is the curatorial resident who's put together this show. And basically, the way our curatorial residency works is two times a year, we are able to give an honorarium or a stipend to an emerging up-and-coming curator local in Cincinnati and mentor them to put together a show. So that opens on Saturday, as you said, January 11th, 6 to 9. And at the same time, so on second Saturdays in Camp Washington, things are always happening. And so at the same time, we have an exhibition opening next door at the Welcome Project, which is a solo show. So pretty much every second Saturday in Camp Washington, there's multiple art venues open. So
coming up in March, you have Camp Street
Corner
Foodways.
Yeah, and so that's actually a two-part show. Mark Harris is having a solo show in the downstairs gallery where he's actually going to be exhibiting his works, which are based on calypso music and lyrics, but also growing herbs in the gallery that basically he's investigating how plants have become part of North American culture through the slave trade. So it's a historical take on food. And then upstairs, we have a series of maps produced by Food Mapping, which is an organization that produces maps based on food ways in Cincinnati. So
you involve the community a lot in the way that your exhibitions are displayed and created and curated.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Always. Yeah. So it kind of goes two ways. We have a lot of times artists in residence that stay with us that propose specific projects and work with partner organizations or businesses or even just groups and create projects collaboratively. We have an artist in residence coming from Brooklyn, Nola Hansen, in July, end of July. And Nola runs something called Transboxing, and they will be creating, turning the gallery into a transboxing community, like boxing gym. So
for trans people to box.
Yeah, it should be really interesting. I'm a little bit worried that people are going to get hurt, but Nola has assured me that it will be more about bonding as a community.
Yeah, is this like a temporary display, like an art display?
Yeah, it's an exhibition. So Nola won a artist in residency with Wavepool. So Nola will be staying in our artist space upstairs from the gallery for an entire month and creating this boxing gym.
and there will be live boxing?
Yes. So we also have an artist from Vietnam, Thu Kim Vu, coming to create an installation with the neighborhood that is kind of a ideation on what a perfect city looks like, made out of traditional Vietnamese rice paper lanterns. So it's going to be a light up display, but you can come make a lantern and talk about what you want your city to look like. So
when you're thinking about bringing a resident artist into your program, mm-hmm. what is it that you're looking at from someone like Nola, who you mentioned, who yep. comes up with this pitch that I want to turn one part of your gallery into a place where trans people will be boxing. And then you're to think that this makes artistic sense. Talk about that process.
Yeah, so we have a jury that's made up not just of myself, but other curators around the city and residents of Camp Washington and community partners that kind of vet these proposals. We get a lot of proposals. We had 42 this year and could only pick two. And they look at, is the proposal feasible? Is this integrating or addressing a community need? Is this involving an audience that we haven't reached before? Is it palatable, right? It's kind of like goes through all of these check marks and then we have a discussion. So, yeah.
Did you discover in those discussions that there is a trans boxing community?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. So that's something that I really had no idea before. But after interviewing Nola and talking to them more about what that looks like, the artist really had us all convinced that this was, and we'll see. We'll find out in July. But I think it's going to be successful.
We certainly will. That sounds very curious. I think that will be interesting. Cedric Michael Cox, the locally based painter, you work with local schools and you work as an arts educator as well. Talk about your work with that and what we can expect from you in that respect in the upcoming year.
Well, I just came from St. Francis Serif, where I work Monday through Thursday. And then I do a lot of after-school programming. So the Children's Hospital project that I'm going to be doing with South Avondale, North Avondale, Rockdale, is going to happen in after-school, pretty much after I leave St. Francis. But also I'm doing a residency at Cincinnati Christian Academy, as well as Marymount School, where I'm going to be doing a mural for them. And also I'm going to be doing work at Woodford Padilla School. And that's going to be, that's in Pleasant Ridge. So when I go in there and I do the work with the kids, I have a good relationship with the art teacher and they are well aware of the kind of work that I do and they see a fit for my work with their students. And I think what happens with these residencies is that I learn how to relate to or reconnect myself with various communities. And at the same time, I offer them a different insight to art because I'm actually a working artist and they're not just learning from their, you know, highly educated art teacher, but I'm coming in as the working artist and teaching the kids what I do, how I do, and they get a taste of the actual materials that I use and the process and my process. So it's wonderful. I mean, whether these kids take on a career in industrial design or visual arts or fashion design, the whole idea is that they get a sense of art appreciation and appreciation for the visual arts. And I think that's important. That's what motivates me.
Do these schools have their own arts program or are
you? Oh, yeah.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, they have their own arts program. In some cases, there have been situations where when I was first starting off, I would go to certain schools in certain neighborhoods that didn't have an arts program. So the after-school coordinators, for whether it be the YMCA or Boys Girls Club or whatever, would offer these after-school programs, and I would be that guest artist or that artist who would facilitate the arts program in those schools. But in this case, that's a great thing about it. You're dealing with art teachers who are talking you up, who are familiar with your work, who are referencing what you do to art history, so you're relevant to the lesson at hand. And, in Seven Hills, I don't know if I mentioned it, but I'm going to be back at Seven Hills School this year as well, doing a large mural. And that's like a one-week residency. That's lots of fun. They're really great kids. They crank it out.
Awesome. I heard that you were also going to be on my side of the river in Kentucky doing something. Was that?
Yeah, that's another part of Ludlow Schools. They're one of the schools that's also partnering with the Children's Hospital Project as well. There's a twofold. You have the elementary schools, and then you have the high schools who are going to fine-tune what the elementary schools are doing, and then all the pieces, all 64 paintings, and try to, you know, Cedricize them.
That's going to be a cool one to see this summer. It's over. When should we expect that project to be finished?
I would like to get it done by August. That's my due date. I really have till October. I want to get it done by August because of everything else I have going on. But when the building is up, that's when all the pieces will be placed in their proper space. I mean, the work's going to be in the lobby. They're going to be in patients' rooms. But basically, you're taking 12 designs, and we're just changing them around each time to create 64 works of art. And so they're going to be all over the hospital. So,
is there a particular type of art that you do with young kids, young students, that they are most responsive to, that excites them the most?
Painting. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, we had a guest instructor come in and teach ceramics today, and I was just showing them what I do. And I'm like, these kids really value coming in and teaching ceramics, or stuff like that, because all I do is paint. And it's painting. I mean, it's what I know. It's what I do. It's what I'm comfortable with. 2D material or the 2D medium, drawing and painting is really what they can relate to, because that's my language. That's how I can tell them to push it this way, make it bounce, make it rock. You know, I use terms like that. They're not painting terms, but they understand what I mean. You know, bounce a little bit of that, adding white to a color is, adding tone it, add toning it, or adding tone or value. I'm just like, well, pop a little bit of white in there, and they get it. So it's cool. It's fun. It's an exciting experience to watch someone who is so afraid at the beginning of class that they're going to mess something up, and then teaching them from the general to the specific how to strategically move through the process, but in a fun way where you don't have to crank it out all today. Just, all right, this is what you did today. Chill out. Here's some pencils. Go do your thing. Just draw, draw whatever you want to draw. We'll come back to it next class. And then when you come back next class, they rock it out. I teach them how I paint, basically.
And why is this experience important for young people?
Problem solving. I think when you're attacking things that you've never tried before and you're afraid and somebody's there to guide you and to teach you the proper way of making it happen, and not just letting you just do whatever you want to do, but actually to get a result that that you couldn't have achieved without their help, but at the same time they're pushing you beyond your own intuition or your own courage or motivation, it becomes a thing where it empowers them and it makes them feel bigger and larger than life. I mean, just to see them just go off on their own and create something over the weekend when they come up to you, Mr. Cox, I made this for you. I see how my lesson or whatever motivated them to do more work on their own. And that's a joy. And it's really cool because you're making a difference. I mean, I remember a lot of the things that my professors and in college, of course, but also in grade school. I mean, it comes back to me as I get older, a strange way. And it's kind of scary. You got to watch what you do. You got to watch what you say, man, because they are paying attention. But that's also should liberate you to be your best. So,
and Cal Cullen is the co-founder and executive director of Wave Pool, which is in Camp Washington. And Cal, I'm wondering how Camp Washington impacts the work that you do as an artist there. Would your gallery be different if it were in a firehouse on the other side of town?
Absolutely. Yeah, Camp Washington has really defined most of what we do. Our neighbors have become an integral part of the fabric of our gallery and all the programs that we offer. We're opening up a market right now in response to Camp Washington being a food desert and the neighbors needing food. Speaking to what Cedric was mentioning about problem solving, I mean, that's kind of what artists do, right? We have a superpower in a way. And so even though most of what Wavepool exhibits is not painting typically, we are always looking for ways to solve problems in our community. And that's in creative and innovative ways. So I think that's kind of the thing that makes it art.
We have just a little bit of time left together, and I want to ask both of you, starting with you, Cal. It's a new year. It's January of 2020. You're both pretty well in tune with what's happening in the art scene across the city. Outside of your own work, your own gallery, what do you expect to see out of the city at large from the arts community?
In 2020? So I'm really excited. So Artworks and Wavepool just finished something called the Cincinnati Artist Report. We spent all summer asking... turned out to be over 800 artists in the city, what their biggest challenges are, what they're looking for. And so I think that that report, which will go public in a couple weeks, is really going to steer a lot of organizations to developing new programming, including ours. So I'm excited for that. I'm also really excited for Photo Focus. That's in the fall. And I also, ArtsWave is doing a big push on women in the arts, being the anniversary of suffrage movement. So we're seeing a lot of exciting exhibits that direction too.
All right, and Cedric Michael Cox, what about you?
Well, exciting exhibitions like what Cal is talking about. But I think as the city's growing, as the population in the face of the inner city is changing, I think we're gonna have a lot of people coming in from other backgrounds, other places that are gonna challenge, you know, the safe surroundings of the visual artist here. I mean, you're gonna be asked to step up to the plate. You know, a lot of people come from bigger cities with bigger budgets and, you know, bigger art scenes, and they're gonna bring their best. So I'm looking to be challenged. I'm looking to be motivated to be better in what I do. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, I'm looking forward to the city expanding and growing and just producing better artists.
Cedric Michael Cox is a locally based painter and muralist who also works with local schools and Children's Hospital. And also our guest today has been Cal Cullen, the co-founder and executive director of Wavepool in Camp Washington. Thanks to both of you for coming in and talking.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And we've got details on the upcoming activities at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.